Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, Gwen and Chris. 5:31 the time. Very pleasant Wednesday to you. We're here till 7 o'clock this evening. Padres coming off a sweep of the Arizona Diamondbacks, but we are going to switch gears for just a second right now. Talk to, being a lefty, I notice these kinds of things, Tony. One of the greatest left-handed quarterbacks in the history of pro football, and that would be Boomer Esiason. Had some great, great seasons, as you know, with the Cincinnati Bengals, led them to a Super Bowl, and has been running this Boomer Esiason Foundation for many, many years, and bringing that to San Diego here in the next few weeks. Boomer joins us on the program right now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Chris and Tony. Thanks for having me on tonight. Welcome to the family, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, the Entercom family. You guys are a part of the fan now. Let's go. Let's crank it up, boys.
We're very pleased. And where do you rank yourself on the all-time left-handed quarterback list? Because there's not a lot of you guys.
No, I was going to say there's a short list. It does include Steve Young and Michael Vick and the great Kenny Stabler and myself. I'm trying to think how many
guys that's about are it. That's you know, really
that's
about it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I got to say, Tony, you sound just like your dad.
You sound just like your dad.
It's amazing.
Boomer, I can't shake it, man. Everybody tells me the same thing. I sound exactly like him.
You know what? That's something you don't want to shake, Tony.
No, you're right. You're right.
And I also want to let you know that I know you, I think you have three daughters, don't you?
I do have three daughters.
All right. So how old are they?
11, 10, and 8.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it right now, Tony, because I'm telling you, I have a 27-year-old that's getting ready to get married this summer. And I'm telling you, if you've ever seen the movie Father of the Bride with Steve Martin, I am the Steve Martin of our era right now.
My wife makes me watch it often. It's one of her favorite flicks. So, yes, I have seen it.
She's preparing you.
She is. I think I'm as prepared as I'm going to get. Well, actually, I'm not as prepared as I'm going to get, I guess.
Well, we have a wedding planner. His name is not Frank. Her name is Jennifer. And every time I turn around, there's just another bill, man. You know, that's just the way it goes. But happiness... For my daughter, that's all I really care about, to be honest with you.
I'm with you on that. Boomer, tell us about the run to Breathe West Coast.
You know, Chris, you're very nice to say that I've been running this foundation now for over 25 years, and we've raised in excess of $175 million in the fight against cystic fibrosis disease that my son has. And this is going to be our second annual Run to Breathe on the West Coast. We did this last year with the help of Vertex out there. At Liberty Station Park. It's going to be Sunday morning, June 9th. I love coming to San Diego. I'll be going to the Nats-Padres game the night before. I look forward to that. Check-in starts 7:30 a.m. on Sunday morning, the race is going to start around 9 a.m. I always expect great weather when I come to San Diego. We had a beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning last year. I look forward to it again this year. This is we have five more Team Boomer events left this season. And we will culminate the season at the New York City Marathon here, where we have over 100 runners running for us. So this is a part of the Team Boomer program. We've raised over $10 million with this particular program, in which we want to get cystic fibrosis patients and their families out there running, exercising, because both my son Gunner and Jerry Cahill, who does work for me, he's a 65-year-old double lung transplant patient, just absolutely want people out there with cystic fibrosis to be running and breathing and succeeding, and this is one of the ways we do it.
Boomer, I really would like to go back. You said 25 years since you started this foundation. I mean, it's pretty, I just don't know. Most athletes, a lot of athletes have foundations. You were kind of getting involved in it, I thought, at least before publicly we knew about a lot of athletes doing this kind of thing. Obviously, your son, you wanted to do something, representing him and for his name. But when this all started out, there's just no way you could have imagined it was going to turn into what it has, could you?
No, I couldn't. As a matter of fact, I got involved in cystic fibrosis fundraising in 1989 when I heard Frank DeFord, who was the chairman of the National Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, speaking about how he lost his daughter, Alex, at the age of 8. So Gunnar wasn't even born yet. I was married, didn't have any kids. And I asked Frank if I could help him raise money for cystic fibrosis. So fast forward 4 years, I get traded to the New York Jets. Gunnar and my family are still in Cincinnati as I'm going through the trade and everything. And I get a call to come back to Cincinnati because Gunnar was rushed to the hospital with breathing problems. He was not diagnosed at birth. We got to the Cincinnati Children's Hospital, and there was the cystic fibrosis doctor and the pulmonary nurse, and they told us that he had cystic fibrosis. So this is, you know, God works in mysterious ways. And we feel like Gunnar was placed on this earth not only to inspire us, but put a name and a face to a disease that not many people knew about. So we were lucky enough to grace the cover of Sports Illustrated back in October of 1993 under the headline, A Quarterback's Crusade.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
since that time, it really truly has been a crusade. It's been inspiring. It's been sad. It's been happy. You know, Gunnar's gone through college, which was a hope and a dream when he was diagnosed. And now he's getting ready to go to the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. Last week, he gave the commencement address at St. Louis University Medical School, simply because his doctor now is the dean there, his original doctor. And we are living a life where there have been major advancements in dealing with this disease, and we are on the cusp of hopefully eradicating it in the next 10 years. And Gunnar is living, breathing proof that you can succeed. But we still are losing too many kids to too many lung infections and not enough lung transplants available. So we continue to fight. We continue to try to inspire people and families with the disease. And there have been so many great people all across the country that have supported our fight, even though they may not have liked the Bengals, the Cardinals, or the Jets, who I played for, otherwise known as the Bermuda Triangle, the NFL.
That's not true. You got those Bengals in that Super Bowl. We know you were.
Well, that was a long, Chris. That was a long time ago.
I was in college. I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
I don't think Tony was born at that time.
What year was that?
88.
Yeah, I was born. I was
you
six.
You were six. See, you were jumping around up and down. Boomer, last thing before we let you go. Again, the Run to Breathe San Diego is at Liberty Station Park, June the 9th. And you talked about how people can go to the Boomer Esiason organization, esiason.org, get involved, event, Run to Breathe San Diego. Look it up. You'll get to it online, obviously. But are there any ways that people can just donate who aren't going to take part of the race? Because, I mean, the story is so inspiring, and I know that not everybody is going to maybe be able to make the race, but maybe some people would still like to make a difference.
Well, they could just go to esiason.org. That's our homepage that tells you all about what we have done over the last 25 years. Teamboomer.org is the actual site that is a part of this, so they can go to either one and see what we do. You know, my name is on the door. It has been on the door for 25 years, so it is important for me to always do the right thing, to make sure that we spend the money the best way we know how. We've put over $50 million in drug research. We put over another $10 million in scholarships for CF families. We've expanded our reach into hospitals and to people's homes, and especially when CF families are going through, you know, hurricanes, natural disasters. The Red Cross is great, and they do great work, but they can't help a CF family like the Boomer Esiason Foundation can. So we're in a lot of aspects of people's lives with CF, and this just happens to be one of them, and this is really a celebration and an inspiration for all those families. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys having me on tonight.
Well, thanks for coming out to San Diego. We're looking forward to seeing you guys out there. And when you're at the ball game that night, come on up to the press box.
I'll be there for sure.
Look for the guy that talks like Tony Gwynn. That's
I will, and I'm hoping Manny Machado buys me a hot dog and a beer. How about that?
Well, we'll stick that in his ear. I don't know.
I'll put a good word in for you there, Bowman.
He should be able to afford it. We know that.
Yeah, I think he can.
That's right. Well, my Mets couldn't afford him, so you guys did. So I can't wait to come and see him.
Thanks so much, Boomer.
Thanks, Boomer.
Nice talking to you. Appreciate all the work you've done.
Okay, have a great night, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Boomer Esiason right there. More than just a former NFL quarterback. I think that's pretty clear. And he brought that Sports Illustrated cover up. I now remember it.
I remember.
And seeing his young son there. And it's great to just know that his young son has done all of the things he's accomplished. Because when that article was written in 1993... Nobody knew.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Whether his son would make it past the age of 10.
All right, let's get to the big five.
Get to the big five.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
There's a lot of NFL news today, and I'm going to start with this.
Number five.
The NFL is going to ask teams to do something in this year's training camp they have never asked before. The NFL asked the teams to eliminate some high-impact drills, including the iconic Oklahoma drill. Now, the Oklahoma drill is where you get four guys into a group, and you pretty much, all I can describe it as, it's just carnage. You go at each other, you try to tackle
the
other guy.
It's a running car accident.
It is a running car accident. I remember in high school, I know it was high school.
Head-on car accident.
I got hit in the head so hard in the Oklahoma drill, I'm surprised I'm still alive today. But that's something that they do in the pro camps all the time, and the league wants them to stop doing it because it's part of the league's ongoing effort to reduce concussions. The recommendation came in response to data that showed a high rate of concussions during the early part of training camp in recent years. Chris, do you agree with the NFL for asking teams to do this?
Yes, I do agree with the NFL for asking teams to stop doing this. You can still be successful without drills such as the Oklahoma drill. But I still can never be 100% sold that the NFL is going to be able to take the violence out of this game. They would like us to think that they're doing everything they can, but in my mind, National Football League Sundays, it's just violence. And these guys play it, and they're going to continue playing it and getting hurt, regardless of whether there's Oklahoma drills or not. So I think it's a nice thing to try and do, but I don't know how much it's going to help.
Tony, what do you think about the Oklahoma drill?
Yeah.
And banning it.
I think it's a great idea. I was amazed that they hadn't banned it yet.
Yeah, really?
Honestly, I didn't. I thought it was already banned, but I think it's a good step.
I mean, if you're going to take away all the tackles these guys make over the middle, you better take away the Oklahoma drill.
Right. That's got a no brainer. I'm glad they've asked the NCAA to do the same thing. I think it's a great rule, and I think it's an unnecessary drill and doesn't make you any better of a football player. I have a hard time believing that drill makes you a better football player.
In the article I read, Bill Belichick is someone who uses this a lot for toughness, to fire the team up, and
that might be true, but I don't think that makes you a better football player that day.
Good points.
Number four.
Points.
Bill Belichick will find something else. And he will have more than...
And then he'll have another title,
probably.
Too.
Okay, let's not say that with him in the room.
Thomas. The Nationals' Adam Eaton and Mets' Todd Frazier have not been the biggest fans of each other over the years, but the former Chicago White Sox teammates apparently needed several on-field exchanges, plus a couple days' worth of parting shots through the media to squash a years-old beef. I got to searching about feuds in baseball today, and I found some really good ones, so it made me think, Tony, what two players are your favorite feud in baseball? In history, it doesn't matter what time it was.
Baseball history.
Baseball history.
First of all, who are the two guys?
Adam Eaton and Todd Frazier.
This goes back to when they were actually teammates.
Right.
Their feud goes back a ways back, but... I guess my two favorite would be maybe A-Rod and Veritek.
Oh, that is a great one. I didn't even think about that.
That was funny because...
Was that the one that led to Pedro Martinez throwing Don Zimmer on the turf?
Yes, it was. Don lost his mind. He went running after Pedro. And Pedro's not the right guy to run at that point because Pedro has no mercy for anything. I'm saying Veritek and Alex Rodriguez. That one was funny because it was almost like neither of them really realized how strong each other was.
Yeah.
Like, A-Rod tried to, like, suplex Veritek, couldn't get him up. Veritek tried to, like, body slam A-Rod. He couldn't get him up, and they were just there wrestling. That's probably my best rivalry.
That is a good one. Chris, who do you think is your best rivalry in baseball?
Oh, I know who I know is the best rivalry in baseball, and you're talking about a Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. I'm going to talk about a Dodgers-Giants rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
This is the old days. I get it.
Oh, Masson Bumgarner, Yasiel Puig?
No. I'm going to take you to August 22nd, 1965. I was barely born. All right, fine. 42,000 people were at Candlestick Park. A ball got thrown at Juan Marichal, a pitcher for the San Francisco Giants, Sandy Koufax. Marichal came to the mound with his bat. John Roseboro, the catcher, intervened. Juan Marichal hit John Roseboro over the head with his bat. Still the ugliest moment in Major League Baseball.
This was
history.
With his bat?
With his bat. Marichal hit the catcher who was trying to break up the fight between Marichal and Koufax with his bat.
Wow.
Clubbed him over the head. An action never seen before or since, thank God, on a Major League Baseball field. Yes, I know it was over 50 years ago, but the Dodgers and the Giants hate each other as much for that as anything else.
Who was it a few years back that threw the bat? Like, it was like there was a beanball war going and
somebody just gunned the bat?
They took it was like a fake swing and let the bat go.
Okay. I didn't see that. I don't remember it.
The first thing that came up when I Googled player throws bat at pitcher was Manny Machado throwing a bat at an A's pitcher.
That might have been it.
Attaboy, Manny.
There we go.
All right.
Man, do you think, side note, do you think if that happened today, the person using the bat would be charged with assault?
Yes.
And go to jail?
Yes.
That's assault with a deadly weapon.
That would definitely happen if it happened today.
It happened. I mean, Juan Marichal's in the Hall of Fame, so Sandy Koufax. I mean, these weren't no-name people that were involved in this.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. All right. I like
number
to teach
three.
You things, Scraby, even though you make fun of me.
No, that was amazing. Who was the guy in Cooperstown? I know we're getting off track here, but who was the guy in Cooperstown that was with the Giants and he was sitting in the lobby and I tried to get him? He was a pitcher. Was it Juan Marichal?
Yeah,
I think it was.
Okay, that's why I was trying to put two and two together.
Think you were trying to get him on our show.
He wanted nothing to do with me.
Yeah, well, he picked up a toothpick and you ran for cover.
Yeah.
Number three.
Thank you, Thomas. If you've been living under a rock, then you will not know this. Drake is a huge Toronto Raptors fan, and he is, let's just say, very eccentric on the sidelines. His act.
Eccentric.
Yeah, his act on the
you
sidelines.
You missed it last night, Tony.
Is starting
to get. Oh, I saw that part.
Oh, did you see that part? Okay.
Well, this is why it's all happening, because his act on the sidelines is starting to get people angry, especially Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo. His ex-agent released a statement after last night's Raptors win, claiming that Drake is a huge distraction. The statement said, quote, "Imagine a gig in an athlete on VIP seats, right next to the band. Stands up on the stage just to show off during the entire game, knowing cameras are on him, occasionally even massaging the singer. Security and him both allow it. Never seen anything as disrespectful as this before. ... End quote. Chris, do you think something needs to be done with Drake on the sidelines?
They got to put a rope around his waist and keep him tied to his seat.
He needs a leash.
I mean, honestly,
he's
he needs a leash. Antetokounmpo unfortunately started it by airballing a free throw. And that gave Drake all the ammunition he needed to get all over Antetokounmpo the entire game. And it is true, he did go over and massage shoulders of his own head coach, Nick Nurse, during a timeout.
He definitely did that.
I mean,
like, come on, bro.
Look, you get the Nicholson seats, sit in the Nicholson seats. That's all. But I know it's a different time and era, but they need to tether Drake.
Knock it off. It's not a different time and era. If it was a regular fan that got up and was doing what Drake would do, he would have been absolutely suplexed into the stands.
Yes.
They would have tackled him and dragged him off like he was a piece of trash.
You're right.
But because it's Drake and it's Toronto, they let it ride. And
the NBA really shouldn't let it ride. If Toronto's not going to do something about it, the NBA has got to inform Toronto. to do something about it.
I'm willing to bet that word has already come down. Because, you know who made a comment about it was Budenholzer today. He made mention about it.
That's fair for him to
say
something.
And once you start getting the coaches and the players, actually, and not even really players, the coaches are complaining about it, that's going to cease. Because ultimately, Drake, although he's a high-paying fan, he's still
a fan.
A fan.
The Raptors are going to need to get a get-back coach for Drake.
That would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Hire the guy from the Super Bowl. Good line.
That would
be
amazing.
Hilarious.
Good line.
Like, get back Drake and just pull him by the leash.
Pull him by the leash.
Number two.
Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert has not been shy to make comments that could be taken as hostile about LeBron James. And even though LeBron ended his second stint with the Cavs better than the first, Gilbert is still talking about him. Now, to be fair, he was asked to answer this, but his answer is what got people talking. He was asked to characterize life with LeBron James on your team. Gilbert said, quote, "With LeBron, there was a limited shelf life in terms of his age and his contract commitment. It's a win now at all costs. It all revolves around the Sun, which is him. Whatever pressure comes with it, it worked out. We won a title," end quote. Tony, do you think Gilbert is being critical of LeBron, or is he spot on?
He is correct. But I also think he's getting in a little jab there. I mean, he ended it with what he should have started with, right?
Yeah.
He should have just said, well, there's pressures that come with it, but we won an NBA title. It worked out.
No, instead he said he revolved around the Sun.
Instead, he had to give you the whole synopsis of what happens when LeBron James is in the building, and that was unnecessary. So that's why I believe he wasn't just being spot on. He was being spot on and getting a little
snarky
jab in there at the same.
Chris, what do you think? Do you think Dan Gilbert is being critical of LeBron, or is he spot on?
I think Dan Gilbert ought to shut up. Cleveland Cavaliers last 5 years won 57, 53, 51, 50, and 19 games. LeBron James has made this guy a whole lot of money. This guy is gotten him a championship. LeBron James has brought everything he possibly could to the city of Cleveland, and this owner's been out of line for a long, long time. And I think it took a lot of chutzpah for LeBron even to come back the first time after the crap that Gilbert said about him when he left to Miami. So this is an owner who ought to just stay behind the scenes.
Number one.
This was a pretty big story today. 19-year-old pitcher Carter Stewart is in agreement with the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks of the Japanese Pacific League on a six-year contract worth more than $7 million. Experts think this is groundbreaking and could have big ramifications in baseball. Stewart was chosen by the Atlanta Braves with the eighth pick in the last year's draft out of a high school, but did not sign after they reduced their signing bonus offer due to an alleged injury. He was expected to be chosen in the early second round of this June's draft, but by signing with Fukuoka, which has won four of the past five Japan series, Stewart would guarantee himself a lot more money than he would have made with a major league organization. In theory, he could be a free agent and sign with an MLB team in 6 years. Chris, do you agree with the strategy?
I lost you at Don't Dump This.
Fukuoka?
Yeah, the whole Fukuoka thing. What happened again?
This kid got drafted by the Braves. He turned him down, signed with a Japanese league for 6 years and $7 million, and people are thinking he's changing the trend.
You think more players are going to go to the Japanese league rather than...
He's showcasing himself at a professional level instead of being in AAA, AA, single A.
I see. Okay. I don't think that's going to be for everybody. So, no, I don't think it'll start a huge exodus of players to Japan.
All the baseball writers are up in a tizzy today.
Good for them.
Tony, what do you think?
I think it could.
Really?
And here's why.
I mean, it changes your life completely moving over there.
It's going to take special individuals. I mean, you got to go into Korea or going to Japan to play baseball. Although you're treated better than you would be as far as the amenities, when you go over there as opposed to being in the minor leagues. It's a much more disciplined regimen out there. I mean, it's a lot different. And talking to a lot of guys who've been over there and come back, it's one of the things they say is you got to be disciplined. They want you to do things a certain way, and you got to do it that way.
Don't dog it on a ground ball over there either.
That being said, this kid signed for $7 million over 6 years.
It's not much.
It's not much. You know what he'd have got if he signed his signing bonus here? It was like they offered him something around 2.3, right? And once you get, that's just a signing bonus. Once you sign, he would have made like $10,000 a season. in the minor leagues. Over there, even if it doesn't work out, he's going to end up with $7 million.
Came so you here, think more people might do this?
I could see this being happening, and baseball's going to, if it does, baseball will have to make some serious changes because the monopoly that they hold over college players and high school players with no other leagues out there competing, they would have to change some things.
Good stuff, guys.
It'll be interesting.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
It'll still take some special kids to want to go.
I was going to say, because I've been over there, and it is just so far away and just removed from the life you're used to living. I mean, you have to really think it through before you're going to make a move like
that. There's no Total Divas over there in Japan.
Why not?
I don't think they get the E! Network over there.
Oh, you mean the show's not on?
Yeah, the Total Divas show. Yes.
Oh, I'm sure it's on, and I'm sure Kardashians is on in Japan as well. Gwynn and Chris coming back. 6 o'clock, final hour next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is Thomas ready?
Gwynn and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
Okay, normally we do a top five. Today we stretched out a little bit, kind of in honor of what the Warriors are doing right now. Wanted to design a 8-team tournament to come up with the greatest NBA team in history. And it's not a one-year team, it's kind of an era. So we're going to give you our brackets, and then you can figure out who you think would win it.
Were we supposed to rank these?
Yes. Oh. You're supposed to have a top seed on down through an 8 seed. So I'll give you a moment. I will tell you that I had 5 best of the rest teams. These teams did not make it into my final NBA tournament. The LeBron, Dwayne Wade Heat, best of the rest. 4 straight finals, 1-2, lost 2, did not make the tournament. The San Antonio Spurs, 5 championships under Popovich and company, did not make the tournament. Why? Wow. I know, that's a wow, right? They never won back-to-back, so they didn't make it. Minneapolis Lakers, George Mikan, 1940s. Sorry, that was too long ago. They did win 5 out of 6 titles once, but they didn't make it either. And Moses Malone's faux Philadelphia 76ers of the early 80s. One of the great teams in NBA history, but only won 1 title because they were surrounded by a couple of teams that are in my tournament. All right, there's my best of the rest. Did I give you time to seed everything?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
Number 8.
Please don't ever play that again.
That was freaky.
That was creepy.
Weird. All right, 8 seed. You want me to go?
Yeah.
Bad Boys. 1989 Detroit Pistons. 1990 Detroit Pistons. Meanest, best defensive team ever in NBA history. You can look up the numbers. Obviously, they had different rules back then. You were allowed to club people over the head with an elbow, but they played under the rules that were at the time, and they did it as well as anybody. I guarantee you that any team in this tournament that draws the Bad Boys would have their hands full with that great team. They're my number 8 seed.
They are also my number 8 seed.
Wow.
Indeed, they are the Bad Boys for the same reason. They got away with clubbing everybody, especially Michael Jeffrey Jordan. So much to the point that he's decided, I'm going to lift a lot of weights and you guys will never beat me again. And then I'm not going to let you on the dream team, Mr. Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
He pretty much held a grudge from that point on.
Yes, he did.
But Detroit was number 8.
The Bad Boys as we continue on this list, you will see that in my list anyway, the Bad Boys beat two or three of the teams on this list to win championships. That was a great Detroit team.
Number right. seven.
Oh, wow. That's weird.
It sounds like a horror movie.
Number seven seed for
number
me.
Number seven.
Number seven seed for me. Probably a little low for Tony's liking. The Shaq Kobe Lakers three-peat team of 2000 to 2002. The reason I have them seventh, certainly not anything they did. They were fantastic. One of the best teams NBA has ever seen. I mean, those two players alone. But they didn't really have a great foe. They beat some pretty decent Portland, Sacramento-type teams, but their NBA Finals opponents were just garbage, to be honest with you.
Or they were just that
Nets,
dominant.
Or they were that dominant, but I don't think those were really good Nets, Sixers, Pacers teams. They were okay. Anyway, it's a tough list to crack. They're on it, but they're my number seven seed.
My number seven seed is the Philadelphia 76ers. That Moses Malone team.
The Mo.
Yes. I know they only won great. One. But this team was a dominant team with Moses Malone cleaning up everything on the backboards.
And yeah, Dr. J.
I can't forget about
Julius Irving. Yeah, Andrew Toney, unbelievable shooter. Maurice Cheeks, fabulous point guard. Bobby Jones, great defensive forward. And Moses Malone famously said, "We're going to go through the playoffs in foe. But they ended up going FIFO. They lost one game in the playoff run that year. All right.
Number six.
Number six for me is also the 76ers, but not that 76ers team. It is the 1967 version with Wilt Chamberlain that was the first team ever to win as many as 68 games. They're overshadowed, of course, by the 60s Celtics, which won every year. But I think a team with Wilt Chamberlain at the top of his powers has to be in this tournament, at least at number six. Because Wilt, when he was at the top of his powers, was the greatest force the game has ever known. So the Sixers are number six for me.
Number six for me are these Golden State Warriors.
Ooh, number six.
Yes.
Okay.
These guys... They're really good, and they'll move up the list if they are to win the title to this year.
Win another one.
They win another one this year, they'll move about two spots up.
Okay.
Number five.
Hey, we're back to familiar ground now. Number five for me is the Bill Russell 1960s Boston Celtics. Yes, they won 11 out of 13 championships, which is really off the charts, and Russell beat Wilt all of those years, beat some great Laker teams as well, but the NBA only had like 10 teams back then. It was a little different. They didn't have to go through four rounds of playoffs, and it's just hard for me to believe that athletically that team could keep up with too many of the other teams on my list, but you have to give them their due for all those championships, so I rank them number five.
My number five is the Houston Rockets.
Hey, the back-to-back Rockets.
Back-to-back Rockets.
Good
Mario
teams.
Ellie. Mario.
Yeah, Mario Ellie.
I've been around you too long.
Mario Ellie. My uncle. Yeah.
Mario Ellie. Sam Cassell. Hakeem. Kenny Smith. They had a squad. I like that squad.
Clyde the Grind?
Yeah, Clyde the Glide.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that Houston team was great. But they won their two titles in the 2 years that Jordan was off playing baseball.
They did.
So there is a little asterisk attached to them.
Hey, you
got to
get in where you fit in.
They did it. They did it. It's a great team.
Number four.
All right, my number four is the current Warriors. That's as high as I can put them on this list. Five straight NBA Finals is no small feat. And as you said, Tony, they could sneak up a spot or two by the time they're all done. But with Kevin Durant, along with Curry and Thompson and Green, this is a great team, and they could beat anybody in this tournament. They're number four for me, a little higher than where you had them.
Number four for me, the San Antonio Spurs. Tim Duncan, Greg Popovich, Tony Parker,
Ginobili.
Manu Ginobili.
Yeah.
The list really goes on, and they did it with different role players, whether it was Steven Jackson 1 year, whether it was,
they borrowed Robert Horry from the Lakers
one time.
They
had Robert Horry, right? Yeah. And they added this young kid from San Diego State. I mean, they just kept adding, and he turns into a superstar. They just done it the right way for a long period of time.
Five championships.
Yeah.
Can't argue with them. But they didn't make my list. Got number four seed on yours.
Number three.
All right, number three for me. My top three are all pretty much from the same era, and it's probably just because of my generation. But I think these were the three greatest teams in NBA history. Number three being Larry Bird's 1980s Boston Celtics with Mikhail and Parrish and DJ and Danny Ainge, as much as I hate Danny Ainge. They won three titles. They had to beat the Lakers Showtime. They did. They had to beat the Bad Boys one year. They did. They knocked out Dr. J. They knocked out Michael Jordan one time. The 80 Celtics won three titles, and that's my third greatest team of all time.
My third greatest team of all time is the Boston Celtics, the Larry Bird's Boston
Celtics.
That one. Yes.
Yeah, same one.
As for all the reasons you just named, I mean, these guys, as much as I couldn't stand them, as the older I got, the more I appreciate
right,
them.
Right, I was the same way.
I couldn't stand anybody on their team. Especially Danny Ainge, but
how about Mikhail clotheslining Kurt Rambis?
You know, it's hard for me to go back to not liking Mikhail because I like him so much now.
I know he's good.
He's really good analyst. Good, I just like him now. But that team is the number three team for me.
All right,
number two.
I'm assuming we're going to have the same two left over. Let's see. My number two is Michael Jordan's Bulls. Six titles, two three-peats. I don't think there's anything more that has to be said. I am a Bulls fan. You'd think I'd be a homer and put them number one, but I do think there is a team that's better than them, just slightly.
Yep, I have the Bulls at number two on my list, too.
Okay.
Michael Jordan is the truth, man. Still the greatest player ever to put.
That's the funny thing
sneakers.
When you talk about it, these kinds of lists with people, they always go, well, the 90s Bulls, I mean, all they have is Jordan. Well, yes, he would be on the team. So that would, you have to include him when you're doing the ranking.
Yes, there's a reason why people consider him the greatest ever.
Yeah.
This is kind of part of it.
I'm going to let you go first on number one because I got to steal the thunder the whole way.
It's the Los Angeles Lakers of the Showtime era.
Yeah, me too.
This was everything we're watching now without the three-point shooting. Like the ball getting up and down, lots of fast brace dunks. This is the first time where basketball became a show.
Yep.
It wasn't just a game. And when you went to a Laker game, you were there to watch the show. They kind of stole it from the Madison Square Garden. You guys notice the court is the only thing lit up in the building? They want to give you that whole opera feel, right? You're watching
Showtime.
The stage. And that's what the Lakers brought, and that's why they're number one on my list.
Mine too. Kareem, Magic, Worthy, Cooper, Byron, the names, you know them. And they won five of the titles in the 1980s. Lost two to the great 80s Celtics. The Bulls did beat them, but not really beat them because they had kind of faded by the end of the 80s and 90s. Early 90s, the Bulls beat them as they were kind of crossing paths. But I have always felt that the only team that might be able to beat Jordan would be the Showtime Lakers. I know Jordan beat Magic in the 91 final, but that was not Magic with not the rest of the guys. All right. There you go.
The countdown is now closed.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Don't do it. Don't overdo it.
Okay, Padres fans, now's your time to ask the experts.
I was hoping maybe you can bring a little insight into it.
Gwynn and Chris answer all your questions about the Padres.
Hurt the pelota big time.
Padres Pen Pal starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
So, Padres Pen Pals was something I started when I found a Facebook group called the San Diego Friarhood, and there is a good amount of Padres fans in there with a lot of great conversations. So, I post a question once a week. What do you want to ask Gwynn and Chris? And these are the questions I got. And there's some fiery ones today.
Oh.
Fiery. So,
that's because the team was struggling earlier in the week.
Exactly, exactly.
They had something to get off their chest this week.
Yeah, you could say that. There's a couple I couldn't put in here.
Okay.
A couple I couldn't put in here. But let's get started. Oh, thank you for writing in. Such a dork.
You just love the fact that you came up with that little scribble and we like it.
True, because you don't like anything else about this segment except for the questions. This one, first one comes in from Matt Whitmore. We know that Fernando Tatis Jr. is probably going to come back Friday. There have been reports of him coming back Friday, possibly. But this is the question. Where does Tatis fit in the lineup when he is back? Does he go right back to the top of the lineup coming off a hamstring injury? Let's start with you, Tony.
They're talking about this Friday?
I believe I read that he's coming back this Friday.
I haven't heard of that
it's
anywhere.
It's not confirmed or anything like that.
Where did you read that at?
Reports. Yeah, our friend Dennis Lynn from The Athletic.
Okay. About to find that. And when was that?
I believe yesterday.
Okay.
How did I miss that entirely?
How is nobody talking about it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think he will go right back. If they were going to wait till he's 100% healthy, he'll slide right back into that one slot. It looked like he was the most comfortable in the one slot, it looked like. I mean, I think Fernando's comfortable wherever you put him in the lineup, but the Padres took off, started to play better offensively when he got into that leadoff spot. So, yes, I think he moves right back into that leadoff spot, and then from there, hopefully this offense can take off.
Update. Dennis Lynn tweeted today at 4 p.m., which I should have picked up on this. Andy Green said Fernando Tatis Jr. will not return during the upcoming road trip. He has not gotten into an extended spring game yet. But still the question, it's the same question, even if he doesn't come back Friday.
I was going to say, he's not coming back Friday. Because...
Wait a second.
Scraby
just told all of San Diego that Fernando Tatis Jr. is coming back on Friday.
No, I said there were reports.
But if you think people don't hear the word, there are reports.
Well, they should.
The only thing they hear is Fernando Tatis Jr. is coming back on Friday. Both Tony and I said, "Are you? No way."
That's why I questioned it. Right.
Right. We would know this. And it's pretty clear now that you're just.
That came out after the game, though. So everything when I was preparing this segment was as it was said.
Andy Green said yesterday, I don't know how Dennis Lynn could have tweeted it out, and Dennis is an excellent reporter, and he knows
I'm about to
think
go
that,
to Dennis's.
But he couldn't have tweeted that out because
Twitter
Andy
account.
Green said yesterday, he's still not running full speed, and until he runs in full speed, he can't play in any rehab games.
Like I told you guys.
So if he said that, how in the world could he be ready to join the Padres on Friday?
First of all, they got him in Arizona right now. That means he's hurt.
But to answer your question, Scraby, even though your premise was wrong, he does go back into the leadoff spot when he's ready because Garcia had a nice game today, but the Padres don't have a better...
I found where I saw it, and it's from a credible source. Dennis Lynn said on another radio show yesterday that Fernando Tatis isn't far off and that this weekend is the earliest he returns.
Likeliest, the earliest. Yes, I got you. He's not coming back this weekend.
Not coming back.
Man. After Chris got done complimenting me, that happened.
Well, it did.
That did happen.
Yes, it did.
All right, next up on the Pen Pals, Richard Burns. He says, this one I think was typed with a little fire. I want to know why Kinsler, who is hitting 184 this season and 263 in May, is still a Padre, and Urias is in AAA. He's hit .444 in his last five games and .350 with 12 home runs, 9 doubles, and 3 triples this season in AAA. So he wants to know why... he's still down with the AAA team. Chris,
he's not in Oh, go ahead.
Oh, he's not in... Wait,
no,
go ahead.
I'm going to let you finish. Go ahead. You say
I just wanted to say that the reason this is A, Kinsler got an $8 million contract, and he's going to get a chance to earn some of that money. B, Urias has been up twice, and he hasn't put up anything close to those kinds of numbers in the big leagues yet, and I think they got to be very careful about when they bring him up for a third time, because I don't think... it would do him any good to come up for a third time and not be successful.
Tony?
Pretty much said everything that I wanted to say, but I'll just add this. He's not in AAA because they want to see what kind of numbers he puts up in AAA. They know what he can do at AAA. They want to just keep getting him at bats and want to see some of the improvements that don't necessarily show up on the stat line. When that happens, he'll be back up. I'm positive of it.
Next up. From, this is one of my favorite names yet, Nacho Arredondo. That is a good one. He writes in saying, since Franmil Reyes is hitting with good power, does it make sense to move him to fourth or fifth in the order? Tony, you're up first.
Who, Franmil?
Yeah.
Is that what the question was?
Start or sit?
You want me to be doing football now?
No. I think he was trying to play Franmil's laugh.
Manuel just got a haircut.
Manuel got a haircut. I love the end of that.
So Franmil, he's hitting with good power. Does it make sense to move him to fourth or fifth in the order?
No. The reason why, I mean, there's, you still need somebody to get on. And he's been actually getting on. You know, Greg Garcia had a good day today, and he's been, he's filled
in. 3 for 5, right?
Yeah, he's filled in nicely. We talked about this on the air today. If you move Fran Mill from the two-hole spot, who are you replacing him with? are you just flip-flopping somebody? Hosmer seems like he's in a good spot. I don't know if I really want to move him. Manny Machado is hitting in behind Fran Mill Reyes. Let's keep that in mind. Not that Fran Mill isn't a good hitter, because I think he's one of our better hitters. But he's hitting behind, or he's hitting in front of Manny Machado, which means when a team is tasked with the choice of going after Fran Mill Reyes or going after Manny Machado, 100 out of 100 times they're going to take Manny, or they're going to go after Fran Mill Reyes. And he's benefiting from that. So leave him where he is.
Chris, you know, if you're going to move Fran Mill Reyes to fifth, then you have to move Manny Machado to sixth. And you're not going to do that. So you say, keep Fran Mill Reyes in front of Manny Machado because it's working beautifully. It is perfect right now. Why change something that's working absolutely perfectly? So the rest of the stuff isn't so good, but don't mess up one thing to try and get everything else right.
All right. You answered my question. Let's move on.
I think I did.
This next pen pal wrote in, Maggie or CJ Good, is Margot the odd man out when Franchi comes back? Chris, you're up first.
No, I don't think so. I think Margot still has a spot. Cordero moves into the rotation. Jankowski hopefully comes back and moves into the group. And then you got five guys, and the three best will be playing. And, you know, that includes Fran Mill. I mean, hopefully he's still hitting the same way then and just plays every day in right field. But the more the merrier out there, way I see it, because Renfro's been up and down. Myers has been down and down. They need Franchi. They need Jankowski. But Margot still is part of the mix, I think. I don't think you just cut him loose.
Tony?
I think it remains to be seen. I don't think you can do six outfielders, because that's basically when you add Jankowski and Fran Mill, or in Franchi, you have now six outfielders. And that works if your infield is set. Like, your left side set when Tatis Jr. is healthy, but is your right side set? It's not set right now. You know Hosmer's going to be in there, but second base, you got to have some flexibility there because there hasn't been a consistent second baseman yet. So somebody's got to be left out. Is it Manuel Margot? I think it'll depend on who's hot and who's not when that time comes, when Franchi is healthy, when Jankowski is healthy. Low man on the totem pole is going to be on the outside looking in. Maybe Manuel Margot, may not. Maybe not.
All right, good stuff. A couple more here. This is from Andy Mann. He says,
Stop talking over the pencil writing.
Oh, I put like 12 seconds of it, so.
Right, we'd be waiting here forever.
Yeah,
but that's still my favorite part of our show.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
I can sit back.
It's not my favorite part of the show. It's up there, though.
If, and he puts in parentheses, and I hope not, we are below 500 by the end of the year, say under 75 wins, do you think the Padres replace Green and go a different direction with this young talent, kind of like the Cubs did a couple years ago? And what do you guys think if we are under 75 wins by the end of the year? Tony, you're up first.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. What'd you say?
At least you're honest. If the team finishes under 75 wins, do they have to go in a different direction in management?
Oh.
I know this is a tough question. Tough question.
I don't know. Do they have to? No, they don't have to. Is it likely that there could be a change? I don't know, but I think there would be a... It would be...
Are you okay, Chris?
Not really.
I think it would be... I think there would be a lot of people disappointed if they end up at 75 wins. Especially the way the year has started. I'll say that.
Yeah. I mean, they're winning record right now, so... Chris? Are you okay first enough? I don't think so.
I gotta stop drinking water while Tony's talking. Or trying to... drink slushies, because that was a disaster a couple weeks ago, too.
I don't like to be hardcore on managerial decisions, but I would say that if the Padres win 75 or fewer games, Andy Green would probably have to, at the very least, be looking over his shoulder. And
yeah, we're not
yes.
trying to fire anyone here. We're just
I would say that there'd be a pretty good chance they would make a change.
All right,
because this team really should be better than that.
Last one, and it's for Tony only. Sorry, Chris.
Okay.
Ramon Mata. He is asking, what is your best memory in your childhood with your dad at the ballpark?
Best memory of my dad at the ballpark. It probably was that All-Star game I told you guys about in Colorado. It was like the most amazing baseball moment of my life. We are sitting in a room full of All-Stars. Barry Bonds, Curt Schilling, Daryl Kyle.
Wow.
Barry Larkin. I mean, the list was pretty crazy. And they are just having a roundtable powwow on how they get each other out or how they attack each other when they're at the plate. It was like baseball gold, if you are into that type of thing. I'm a baseball nerd, so just to sit there and be at the table listening to these guys, these Hall of Famers, talk about, you know, what made them go was probably my favorite moment with my dad.
Cool. Thank you to all of our pen pals. We had Matt, Richard, Nacho, Ramon, Maggior, and Andy.
Thank you, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.